Rapture is a popular concept among many Christian groups. In fact, as I was researching for this particular sermon, I looked at various Bible helps, and I was surprised how often that particular idea came up. In the rapture theory says that when it does take place, thousands of people will disappear into thin air from homes and offices and schools and factories. Cars and trucks will crash, veer off the road, or plummet over cliffs as drivers are taken away. Planes will plunge to earth as pilots disappear. And those left behind will wonder where they went and what's going on. And the event is even something that's the subject of bumper stickers. The one I've seen most often is, in case of rapture, this vehicle will be unmanned. And the rapture, the only way to fly. And almost all Christians, as you look at this particular subject, believe that Christ will come again. We believe that Christ will come again. That's what we're hoping for, and that he will come soon. And they believe that believers will be caught up to meet the Lord in the air. But the details and timing of this event is where there is disagreement. Now, those who believe in the rapture say that believers will be caught up to meet Christ in the heavens before the tribulation period. And they believe that this is a concept that is taught from Revelation and throughout the entire Bible. You have another school of thought that says there is not a single verse in the Bible that upholds the pre-tribulation theory, and there is no scripture for a pre-tribulation rapture. So the question is, who's right? We have to keep in mind, just because a theory is popular, and this theory has gained a great popularity over the years for varying reasons, doesn't mean it's biblically accurate. For instance, Sunday is the day most Christians worship on. However, we know that Sunday is not the day that God established for us to worship on. It is Saturday. We also know that many groups teach that the law is done away with. And we know that the law has not been done away with, but the law is not what saves us, but it is the guide and what we must live by in faith and following Jesus Christ. So what we have to do is we have to prove all things and hold fast to that which is true. For instance, is the word rapture in the Bible? Is it found in the Bible? Well, you can look in a Bible concordance, and you won't find that particular word listed. But it's not in the Bible, and if it's not in the Bible, as one of those words is found in a concordance, how did it become seen as a biblical event? So we're going to examine this theory, and I've entitled my sermon, "The Rapture, Is It Biblical?" So the name rapture is based on 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verse 17. That's where that's one of the chief scriptures that corresponds with the rapture theory. And we're not going to turn there, but I will read you the words that are used in order to come up with the word rapture. In verse 17 it says, "Then we who are alive and remain shall be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air, and thus we shall always be with the Lord." And where this word rapture comes from is from the words that are translated here, "shall be caught up." Shall be caught up. And that word in the Greek is, and I'm trying to sound this out, it's harpe pagi sometha, and that's the Greek, but the Latin word is rapere, and from which rapture is derived. So that's a Latin word which has been used as the source for coming up with the word rapture. And free of any mysterious interpretation, the word in the Greek there means to be caught up, to be snatched, to be seized. And the thought is that Christians are literally snatched or seized from the earth by Jesus Christ at his coming. So widely held is this belief that it's found in the dictionary now. Webster says the experience anticipated by some fundamentalist Christians of meeting Christ midway in the air upon his return to the earth. And even this definition does not accurately reflect the prevalent explanations of the theory. Rapture defenders teach that Christ will do his snatching of believers before and separate from his return, not upon his return. That is, Christians who hold this interpretation of the prophecy teach that the second coming of Christ will be in two stages. First, the rapture, that is, Christ coming for his saints. And those who believe in Jesus will be snatched away, rising to meet Christ in the air. And this is the time when Christians who are driving their cars and trucks and buses and planes and all of that will disappear. And a lot of destruction will ensue. Also, many Christians will disappear without explanation, and they will be whisked off to heaven for a 3.5 to 7 year marriage supper of the Lamb. So that's the popular concept. Those remaining on the earth will go through a 3.5 to 7 year tribulation. Now, we believe that it's 3.5 years. There's a reason people believe it's 7. That's based on Daniel 9, verse 27, and it depends on your interpretation, which we're not going to get into today. Later is the revelation. That's when Christ comes with his saints. So there's the rapture, which is Christ coming for his saints, and then there's the revelation when Christ actually returns to the earth somewhere between 3.5 and 7 years later with the saints. So the rapture is presented as a quiet, invisible, and secret coming. That's why it's called the secret rapture. And here are some quotes about what that's supposed to be like. Oral Roberts, in a book entitled How to Be Personally Prepared for the Second Coming of Christ, says, "His appearance in the clouds will be veiled to human eyes, and no one will see him. He will slip in, slip out, move in to get his jewels and slip out as under the cover of night." Another individual by the name of Jesse Silver, in a book called The Lord's Return, says, "Quickly and invisibly, unperceived by the world, the Lord will come as a thief in the night and catch away his waiting saints." And so this is going to be secret, like a thief coming in the night and gathering the saints. So is Christ going to come as a thief? And it does say that he comes as a thief in the night, but what does that mean? We'll look at that here in a little bit. It says in a third comment is from a book by the name of Seven Simple Sermons on the Second Coming by Herschel Ford, and he says the rapture will be a secret appearing, and only the believers will know about it. Probably the most famous of the books that I'm quoting from is The Late Great Planet Earth by Hal Lindsey. That was a book that was very popular when I first came into the church. Everybody was reading it, and there were certain portions of what Hal Lindsey had to say that were accurate and other things that weren't. But Hal Lindsey has done a great deal to popularize this particular idea. It says, "In the rapture, only the Christians see him. It's a mystery, a secret." And finally, G.S. Bishop in The Doctrine of Grace says, "It will be a secret rapture, quiet, noiseless, sudden, as the step of a thief in the night. All that the world will know will be that multitudes at once have gone." So it's a secret rapture. Now, this is a popular theory in our time, but as you go back in history, what's interesting is you don't find very much about it in the early Christian writers. They don't mention it. In fact, they look at the coming of Jesus Christ very differently in a way that we would find to be accurate from our understanding of the Bible. For instance, in an early Christian writing that was written early in the after the death of John called the Didache, it says the Antichrist would come, many would be offended and lost, and the resurrection of the just would follow this time of woe. And all of these are historical. These are not biblical things that I'm quoting from, but they are historical writings that give us some idea of what people were thinking at the time. A book called the Epistle of Barnabas, written about the same time as the previous quote, says, "When the Son comes, he will destroy the time of the wicked one and will judge the godless." And this places the coming of Christ after the reign of the wicked one. We would see that as the beast and the false prophet. Justin Martyr, who lived from about 100 A.D. to 165 A.D., spoke of Christ's coming in these words: "He shall come from heaven with glory, when the man of apostasy who speaks strange things against the Most High shall venture to do unlawful deeds on the earth against us Christians, who have learned the true worship of God from the law and the word which went forth from Jerusalem by means of the apostles of Jesus." He goes on to say, "Christ shall come from heaven with glory, accompanied by his angelic host, when also he shall arise the bodies of all men who have lived, and shall clothe those of the worthy with immortality." So he looked at a time of woe upon the earth when the beast and false prophet or the Antichrist would be at work. After his work is done, Christ returns and defeats him, and there is the resurrection of the dead. Irenaeus, who lived from 130 A.D. to 202 A.D., spoke of the resurrection of the just, which takes place after the coming of the Antichrist. "But when Antichrist shall have devastated all things in this world, then the Lord shall come from heaven in the clouds." So what we see here is the essence of the teaching of these early writers is this: the Antichrist would persecute the church. We would see that as that time as the Great Tribulation. The coming of Christ would follow after the tribulation, bringing to an end the reign of the Antichrist. And then would come the millennial kingdom and the end of the world as we know it, as God finishes up his work there during the millennium and great white throne judgment. George E. Ladd, in a book entitled The Blessed Hope, states, "Every church father who deals with this subject expects the church to suffer at the hand of the Antichrist. We can find no trace of pre-tribulationism." Now, pre-tribulationism means that Christ comes, or there's a coming of Christ and the gathering of his people before the tribulation. That's the secret rapture. It takes place before the tribulation. And so the saints would then be in heaven during the tribulation, and once the tribulation is over, then Christ would return. But as you look at the history of this thing, you see that most people believe that Christ would come after the tribulation. So there is no trace of this in the early church, and no modern pre-tribulationist has successfully proved that this particular doctrine was held by any of the church fathers or students of the word before the 19th century. So what we find is this particular theory, the rapture theory, is of comparatively modern origin. In fact, it dates from around 1830 and really developed from that time forward. Prior to 1830, various writers put forward the idea of a two-stage return of Christ. In the 19th century, it was a man by the name of John Nelson Darby who did much to further this idea. And he was a scholar and a preacher in his time and had a pretty wide impact in Christian circles in his day. And John Darby did a lot to further the idea and to spread it around. What Darby did was to introduce the idea of the rapture into the main current of prophetic interpretation. And why did he do this? How did he come up with this particular idea? An article on the millennium in Unger's Bible Dictionary offers a plausible explanation. In the century before Darby, a man by the name of Daniel Whitby promulgated the philosophy of postmillennialism in England. And this particular interpretation maintains that present gospel agencies, the work of God, preaching the gospel, will root out evils until Christ will have a spiritual reign over the earth. So basically, the gospel would be preached and people would get better and better, and it would drive out all the evils and pave the way for the coming of Christ, for his reign over the earth, which will continue for 1,000 years. And then Christ will come. That is, the second coming of Christ will initiate judgment and bring to an end the present order. So what Darby was seeking to do was to counteract this particular idea. He saw this as a false teaching that the actions of men could bring about the kingdom of God. You know, we can't bring it about. That's something that God will do. And so he was seeking to refute that. And he believed rightly that Jesus Christ would return to the earth to establish rule over the kingdom of God. However, in researching this and preparing to counteract this particular idea, he came up with another teaching. He developed the teaching of the rapture, in which he postulated that Christians, right at the very end time, prior to the return of Jesus Christ, would be raptured away. The secret rapture was introduced into the U.S. in the 1860s and 70s. And though there is some indication it might have been here back in the 1840s, and John Nelson Darby himself came to the United States 6 different times and preached, and probably during that time spread this particular idea as he went about preaching. Following the lead of Darby, a man by the name of Charles Henry McIntosh wrote, and his writings were spread far and wide, and he spread this particular theory. A man named William Blackstone wrote a book entitled Jesus is Coming. And his particular book was given to ministers and spread around quite a bit. And as a result of that, it was spread among a number of different denominations, his idea concerning the rapture. But probably one of the biggest influences back in the 19th century of the rapture was a Bible that many of us are familiar with, the Scofield Reference Bible, which was published in 1909. In fact, the first Bible I bought was a Scofield Reference Bible. I had no clue when I bought the Bible. I mean, I was new at Ambassador College, and they said, well, you need to get a better Bible. So I bought a Scofield Reference Bible because you had to get one with wide margins, and I noticed that there were a lot of notes in there, and I basically didn't know anything about the Bible. So I figured, hey, if I'm in a bind on a test, I've got some references here that I can use. And I had no idea that the rapture theory was in there. But Mr. Scofield put that in his Bible, and it allowed it to spread quite widely. So various writers wrote about this particular subject as time has gone on. And as I said, Hal Lindsey had a great impact on spreading the rapture theory far and wide. In fact, his book, The Late Great Planet Earth, has sold between 15 and 35 million copies. So a lot of people have read The Late Great Planet Earth. Probably if you were in the church in the 70s, you probably read that book. I did. And also he produced a movie which has been widely distributed among Christian groups. And Lindsey proclaimed that the rapture was imminent based on world conditions at the time. And world conditions in the 70s weren't real good. In 1995, the doctrine of the pre-tribulation rapture was further spread as Jerry B. Jenkins and a man by the name of Tim LaHaye wrote the Left Behind series of books. And those books have spread far and wide, and movies have been made about them. And so they've done a lot to help to spread this particular idea and make it something that is espoused by many people calling themselves Christians. So what we've seen so far is that historically we don't find the rapture mentioned by the early New Testament, early writers of the church. They may not have been Christians, but we don't see them addressing this topic. Most Christians felt that the Antichrist would come, there would be a tribulation, and then Christ would come. That's the order that most people looked at it. The idea of a secret rapture is something that is fairly modern. It's not something that we can find going back 1,000 years or more in Christian history. So the church's understanding of the first resurrection is more straightforward. On the day that Christ returns to earth to establish his kingdom, the dead in Christ will rise first, and then those who are alive and converted will follow. They will meet him in the air and return to the earth as a vast army of spirit beings to defeat the beast and the false prophet in the valley of Jehoshaphat. So we have two different scenarios here. One scenario takes place depending upon the group and their particular vantage point. And the Protestant rapture takes place either 3.5 or 7 years before Christ returns, while the church believes the resurrection of the dead will occur at his second coming. For this reason, the Protestant concept is often called the pre-tribulation rapture. And in our view, we see this as happening after the tribulation, and we'll look at some scriptures that help support that here shortly. When believers are caught up in the air, Protestants believe they will go immediately to heaven for a long, spectacular feast. And we believe, though, that the saints will return to the earth to fight in Christ's heavenly army and to help establish God's kingdom. So we have two different points of view, and the main difference is the timing and the destination. So does the Bible support a secret rapture? In other words, will there be a secret coming of Jesus before the Great Tribulation? Let's look at some scriptures in that regard. Let's go to Matthew chapter 24. Matthew chapter 24, beginning in verse 23. So much of the subject of Matthew 24 is about the coming of Jesus Christ. The disciples asked about this, and Christ went into a fairly lengthy explanation of what was to unfold, giving them certain things to look for and to be aware of as things come to an end at the end of the age. So let's look at verse 23. Here it says, "Then if anyone says to you, 'Look, here is the Christ,' or 'There,' do not believe it. For false Christ and false prophets will rise and show great signs and wonders to deceive, if possible, even the elect." We have to realize that deceivers have been around since the church began, and they're going to be around at the end of the age, and it seems like they're going to be more prevalent and effective at the end of the age. But the elect isn't going to be taken in by any deceptions that they offer up in order to lead them astray. Christ says, "See, I have told you beforehand, so be aware that this is coming and be prepared for it. Don't be taken in." He says in verse 26, "Therefore, if they say to you, 'Look, he is in the desert, do not go out,' or 'Look, he is in the inner rooms,' don't believe it." Why wouldn't you believe it? Well, I think we'll be able to see with our own eyes when Christ returns. As he goes on to say, don't believe it for this reason. Verse 27, "For as the lightning comes from the east and flashes to the west, so also will the coming of the Son of Man be." So he's telling you that the coming of Christ, you know, if we're outside and it's dark, or even in the daytime, and we're standing out there and there's lightning that flashes across the sky, we see it, don't we? We see it. And so what is telling us here that when Christ comes, it's going to be something that's visible as lightning going across the sky. And usually if we can see lightning, we can also hear it. We can hear the thunder, that we may see the lightning and the crack, and sometimes it takes a little while, but I think we used to say for every second after you see the lightning flash, it's so much distance that the lightning is away. So it's telling us that Christ coming is going to be visible. You're going to be able to see it. It's going to be obvious to everyone. So when people are telling you that the Messiah is here, there, or wherever, don't believe it, because you'll be able to see it and know that Christ is coming. And he goes on to say in verse 28, "For wherever the carcass is, there the eagles will be gathered together." Now, this seems like a rather strange thing to insert at this particular point, but the point that he's making is about the coming of Christ. And what he's saying is, where Christ is, his people are going to be gathered together. When you see him coming, so if you're alive at the coming of Christ, then you're going to be changed in the twinkling of an eye, and you're going to be gathered to him. So you're going to know he's coming back, and you're going to be gathered to him if you are in the faith. Just as where there's a carcass, a body, then the vultures or the eagles would gather there. And what he's saying here is where Christ is, his people will be there with him at his coming. So then you go on to look at verse 29. A few other scriptures here that pertain to this. It says, immediately after the tribulation of those days. So this is saying that something is going to take place after the tribulation. The tribulation is complete. Immediately after the tribulation of those days, and the tribulation is the fifth seal as you look in the book of Revelation. And then he goes on to talk about the sixth seal. The sixth seal here, the sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light. The stars will fall from heaven and the powers of the heavens will be shaken. And the sixth seal are the heavenly signs. And everybody on the earth is going to be able to see this. They're going to know that something dramatic is taking place. It's going to be obvious to the people dwelling on the earth at that particular time that something significant is going on. The tribulation, it says, after the tribulation. It says in verse 30, then the sign of the Son of Man will appear in heaven. So there's going to be some sign that's going to appear in heaven and people are going to be able to see it. Something dramatic is taking place. It's the time when God is going to intervene in world affairs and people are going to be able to see it and know that it is taking place. So the sign of the Son of Man, and then the tribes of the earth will mourn. See, there, Christ is coming back, and rather than there being great jubilation, the world's going to mourn because they're going to be convinced that the coming Christ is the Antichrist. The kingdom's already here. And this being that's coming is not the true Christ. That's why they're going to fight against him. They're going to mourn. And they will see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. They're all going to be able to see Christ when he comes. And he doesn't come until after the tribulation. You know, so you can see as the rapture theory is put forward, it's before the tribulation, but you see here Christ coming is quite obvious. And with his coming, what takes place? Verse 31, it says, and he will send his, so with his coming, something's going to happen with the saints. And he will send his angels with a great sound of a trumpet. That doesn't sound very secret, does it? With the great sound of a trumpet, and they will gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other. So all this takes place after the tribulation, with the coming of Christ, the sounding of the trumpet, and the gathering of the people of God. They will be gathered to him, so it's all taking place after the tribulation. So we see here that this, as you look at what Christ is talking about, he's talking about his coming. And as you look at this and you put it together, you can see an order that is unfolding here. If you go back to Revelation chapter 1, verse 7, it says, every eye shall see him. Revelation 1, verse 7, every eye shall see him. And if every eye sees him, and we've seen that intimated here in Matthew 24, it can't be something that's secret if everybody's going to see him. God's not going to do something that's this dramatic and important in secret. Now, as you think about 1 Thessalonians 4, verse 16, we're not going to read it yet, but as you look at that verse, it talks about Christ coming. He will descend with a shout. Most of us, when we shout, we're loud because we want to be heard. And God is signaling to humanity that he's intervening. That this age is over. And the age in which God will rule, the age in which Satan will be removed, the age that has been prophesied is coming. And he will signal that it's coming with a shout, with the voice of an archangel, and with the trump of God. Now, if God is trying to be secret about all of this, that doesn't seem very secret. We're going to hear the trump. We're going to hear the shout. People all over the earth will hear it and they're going to say, what is going on? Now, So shouting and the sounding of a trumpet would not seem to be a quiet, secret rapture. Let's go look at this, the idea of Christ coming as a thief in the night. It does say that in the Bible. But what is Christ pointing his people to? Let's go to 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 2. 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 2. And one of the interesting things as you look at the both 1 and 2 Thessalonians is as you read through the book, both of those epistles, what you find is a great deal of reference to the coming of Jesus Christ. And in fact, it just runs through both books as a theme. And I know that as I was looking at those books during the time that we were doing Bible studies on the Apostle Paul, you could see Paul pointing them to the return of Jesus Christ and the hope that it gave to them. And it's not just in 1 Thessalonians 4, but throughout both books. But let's look at chapter 5, verse 2. It says, "Therefore, you yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord so comes as a thief in the night." So it tells us that the day of the Lord so comes as a thief in the night. So does that mean that Christ is going to sneak in and then sneak out? Well, you might draw that conclusion if you just stopped with verse 2. But let's go on and read a few other verses there because it helps to clarify things. Verse 3, "For when they say peace, peace, peace and safety, then sudden destruction comes upon them." And probably at the, you know, we always hear the constant cry of peace, peace, and they're trying to establish peace in the Middle East, peace in Syria and all of this, and it never seems to be achieved. They don't seem to be able to work those things out. And sadly, I think this side of the coming of Christ, we're not going to have the peace that we all desire. But they'll say peace and safety. They're going to continue to work on peace and safety up into the time of coming of Jesus Christ. And so when they say that, don't believe it, because they're going to be promoting peace and safety, but then sudden destruction comes upon them, as labor pains upon a pregnant woman, and they shall not escape. I think of back to the time when my daughter Erin was born. We had some friends over and had a nice steak dinner, and we really enjoyed it. And then that night, the labor pains started. Nobody expected it. So my friends are there, and my brother and a friend had ridden in on a motorcycle, and so my wife and I, were over to the hospital, and so we didn't expect it at that particular time. And we kind of have an idea of when the baby's going to come, but it doesn't always come when we expect it. All of a sudden, boom, you have those pains, those labor pains, and they come on suddenly, and they're intense, and you're like, we got to get to the hospital. Something serious is going on. And he says, he compares them to labor pains upon a pregnant woman, and they shall not escape. But you, brethren. So he said, the world is not going to be aware of this. The idea of the thief in the night is the world. He's going to sneak up on them. They're not going to be aware of his coming. It's going to be a surprise to them. But what about us as Christians? He says, but you, brethren, are not in darkness, so that this day should overtake you as a thief. It shouldn't overtake us as Christians as a thief in the night. If it overtakes us as a thief in the night, it's because we haven't been paying attention. He says, you are all sons of light and sons of the day. We are not of the night nor of darkness. Therefore, let us not sleep as others do, but let us watch and be sober. You know, he's telling us not to sleep. And, you know, you can go to the parable of the 10 virgins in Matthew 25, which tells us don't sleep. Be awake, be alert, have your lamp trimmed. And we know he's coming. It's going to be a surprise to the world, but it should not be a surprise to all of us. So we should be awake and aware of what's coming. Be ready for it. Let's go to Matthew chapter 24, verse 42. Matthew chapter 24 once again. And again, the fundamental theme of Matthew 24 is the coming of Jesus Christ. And so he speaks about this, and again, in these verses we'll take a look at, and he speaks of it in terms of Christ coming as a thief in the night. Matthew chapter 24, verse 42. He says, "Watch, therefore, for you do not know what hour your Lord is coming." So we don't know the specific time of Christ's return. We know he's going to return. We can look at the signs, which would point to the fact that his coming is going to be coming fairly soon. We can realize that, you know, it's been almost 2,000 years since he originally came, so it's probably closer than when we first started the countdown. But the exact day and hour, we don't know. He says, "But know this, that if the master of the house had known what hour the thief would come, he would have watched and not allowed his house to be broken into." So he's using an analogy. If you know somebody's going to break into your house, are you going to be ready? We're all going to be ready, aren't we? We don't want them to break into our house and steal whatever we have. So we're going to be ready. And he's saying, you know that the thief is coming. You know that Christ is coming, so be ready. You know what's going to happen. And so in every generation, they've looked for the coming of Christ. They did in the apostles' time. They did in every generation. Every generation looked at Matthew 24 and said, look how bad the world is. This is all going to come to pass in our time. And if they, and eventually all realized, I don't think it's going to happen now. Well, we live in that time when it could be a reality. Because there are certain things prophetically that can come to pass that weren't a reality in other ages. But he says here that we should be ready for the thief. He says in verse 44, "Therefore you also be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect." So be ready. He's coming, but be ready. So he's telling them that for the world, Christ is going to come upon them as a thief in the night, but for all of us, we should be ready. We shouldn't be surprised. We know he's coming, and he's telling us to be ready. So the verses that we've looked at speak of the coming of Jesus Christ. The verses give no indication of a secret coming. We don't see Christ portrayed here as sneaking around acting as a thief. The verses warn that Christ is coming and God's people need to be watching. We need to be prepared. We need to be spiritually prepared. That's what trimming our lamp is all about. And because they're watching, it wouldn't be a surprise for God's people, as the coming of a thief would be, and they've already been warned, and therefore they are ready. We might ask a question in regard to these warnings about Christ's coming. Why would Jesus warn about being ready for the coming of the Son of Man if the rapture takes place before his coming? Why be ready? They've already been raptured away. Additionally, if all Christians were taken to heaven before the Great Tribulation, and the rapture theory cannot account for two groups of Christians who are talked about in the Scriptures. In Revelation chapter 12, it talks about one group of Christians being in the place of safety. And they'll be there during the entire tribulation. And another group of Christians, the remnant, that's talked about in Revelation chapter 12, verse 17, they will be persecuted. So they're not going to be in heaven. So it creates a problem when you have this pre-tribulation coming of Christ, put that out there as what the Bible is telling you. Some say that the two events of the secret rapture are revealed in the Greek. That's why I've given you the handout, and I figured this would be easier to go through if we looked at it together rather than me just reading stuff off the page. The question is, do the Greek words associated with the coming of Jesus Christ support the rapture? Do these Greek words we're going to look at support the rapture? And there are six primary words that are associated with the second coming of Christ. The first of those words is parousia, which is the personal presence of one who comes and arrives. It talks about in James chapter 5, verses 7 and 8. We'll just look at a few of these. Let's go to James chapter 5. Parousia is probably the main word that's used in regard to Christ coming. James chapter 5, verses 7 and 8. He tells his audience here, "Therefore be patient, brethren, until the coming of the Lord." The word parousia is the word for coming there. See how the farmer waits, and so he waits. And then in verse 8 he says, "Establish your hearts, for the coming of the Lord is at hand." And that word parousia is used there. Apocalypsis is the word for appearance or revelation. That's the word that from which we get the apocalypse. It's the word that's translated revelation. That's what that last book in the Bible is called, the revelation of Jesus Christ. And the word for revelation is apocalypsis. In 2 Thessalonians chapter 1, verse 7, it says, "And to give you who are troubled rest with us when the Lord Jesus is revealed from heaven." It's a revealing. That's why it's called the book of Revelation, a revealing. And an unveiling, a disclosure. And that's one of the words that you'll find used. Epiphania means appearing or appearance, a manifestation. It's used only by the Apostle Paul for the second and future coming of Jesus Christ. And 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 16 says that you keep this commandment without spot, blameless until our Lord Jesus Christ appearing. You know, if you have an epiphany, it's like an idea that pops into your head there that helps to solve a problem, or it could be an epiphany is also a manifestation of God. Phanerou. This word means to manifest or make visible or conspicuous, to make apparent, to show openly. 1 John chapter 3, verse 2 says, "Beloved, now we are children of God, and it has not been revealed," that's where phanerou is used, "what we shall be. We know that when he is revealed, we shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is." So the phanerou and making manifest, revealing. Erchomai is the act of coming, to come from one place to another. Like Christ in giving the 10 minas to the individuals in the parable there, says, "Do business till I come." And the final word is hecho, the point of arrival, to come or to have come, to be here. It's used in Revelation chapter 2, verse 25. "But hold fast what you have till I come." Now, as you look at the words God inspired in the Bible, that are used there, they are straightforward. And none of them refer to anything secret occurring, and they don't refer to two comings. You know, they don't refer to two different comings, but one coming of Jesus Christ. And as I laid out there, you can find these words used interchangeably. You know, he uses a coming, parousia, and then he uses, referring to the same incident, apocalypsis. Then he uses erchomai for a similar quote. And we can see these words are all used interchangeably. They're not magic words. They're to help us understand God's plan and the coming of Jesus Christ. As you see here, one final point here I'd like to make in this regard. Let's go to Acts chapter 1. Acts chapter 1. Acts chapter 1, verse 9. As we look at these Greek words, what they give us are various shades of meaning so that we can better understand what God's plan is and what things are going to be worked out with the coming of Jesus Christ. Acts chapter 1, verse 9, as we begin here, speaks of the ascension of Jesus Christ. And here in verse 9 he says, "Now when he had spoken these things, while they watched, he was taken up, and a cloud received him out of their sight." So Christ was taken up. He rose in the clouds and disappeared. All right, so they're all there and they're all looking up and watching this take place. "And while they looked steadfastly toward heaven as he went up, behold, two men stood by them in white apparel who said," also said. So I imagine they're all looking up at Christ rising in the air, And these two angels appear, and I'm sure they didn't notice the angels right away. And then what do the angels say? Men of Galilee, why do you stand gazing up into heaven? And they're all as probably shocked that these two angels are speaking with them. This same Jesus who was taken up from you into heaven. And it's just in one stage. He rises, ascends into heaven. And what do they say? Will so come in like manner as you saw him go into heaven. It doesn't talk about multiple stages, but there will come a day when Christ will appear in the heavens. He will appear in the clouds, and he will return to earth. So it doesn't seem to really reinforce the idea of a multi-stage working out of the coming of Jesus Christ. Let's go to Matthew chapter 24 once again and look at verses 40 and 41. Because these two verses tend to be problematic. We wonder what they might mean, and these are used to reinforce the idea of a rapture. Matthew chapter 24, verse 40 and 41. Verse 40 says, then two men will be in the field, one will be taken, and the other left. Two women will be grinding at the mill, one will be taken and the other left. So when I first came into the church, I thought I kind of had a little bit of inkling of the rapture kind of a thing, and this rapture would take place and one would rise and one would be left behind. So the idea of the cars being vacated and all of this going on seems to make sense if you just read those two verses. But you have to put them in the context of what is being talked about here. The full context begins in verse 36. It says there, but of that day and hour, no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, but my Father only. And it ends in verse 44. The context ends there. Therefore, you also be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect. So, clearly, the topic is preparedness for Christ's second coming. And his advice to Christians in light of that fact is found in verse 42. He says, watch therefore. Watch therefore, for you do not know what hour your Lord is coming. So what are verses 40 through 41 telling us? It's telling us that the suddenness of this coming will catch people who are not prepared off guard. His return will surprise some living or working side by side with Christians who aren't ready. There will be Christians who are ready, and there will be people that aren't ready. This is going to come upon them as a surprise. And so what it's telling us is that some will be left, not left behind after a secret rapture, but left out because they were unaware. They're not going to rise to meet Jesus Christ in the air. Christ will take some, his called out ones, and leave the others behind. Their time will come later. So not only is the reasoning of the rapture out of context with the scriptures, but it's out of sync with the theology of the Bible itself. So what is the timing? Let's just briefly review the timing. Revelation chapter 6 describes the Lamb of God, Jesus Christ. He is the one that's qualified to open the seals. And he opens the seals. We know the first four seals as the four horsemen of the apocalypse. And as he opens each of those seals, we know that the first seal is the white horse and represents false religion. And interestingly, as you look at the subject historically, false religion has almost inevitably brought about war, conflict over that religion. And that's what will happen at the end of the age. It will lead to war. The red horse. These are going to be of greater intensity than they've ever been before. The results of war bring about the black horse of famine. And famine causes people to be vulnerable to disease. And the pale horse will come upon the earth. As we said earlier in the sermon, the fifth seal is the great tribulation, the time of Satan's wrath. It's going to be a tough time on the world. in the world, and especially for a physical Israel who will be taken into captivity, and for the church as Satan seeks to destroy the church of God. God will protect part of the church in a place of safety and will allow those of the church who are lukewarm to suffer persecution, as we're told in Revelation chapter 12. This time of the tribulation will be the time of the two witnesses who will represent God during the great tribulation. They will announce the trumpet plagues. They will go to the beast and the false prophets and announce them. Unless you change and become pleasing to God and go a different way, just like with Pharaoh, unless you change, unless you relent, this will come your way. So what else takes place? We find in, let's go to 1 Thessalonians. 1 Thessalonians, we see here it talks about the coming of Christ and the sounding of the trumpet. And then we won't read that since most of us are familiar with it. 1 Corinthians chapter 15, it also talks about the coming of Jesus Christ. It said we'll be changed at the last trumpet. So the last trumpet is the seventh trumpet, which is the time of the first resurrection. We will be changed at the last trumpet. And as we see here, the last trump clearly announces the second coming and the resurrection of the dead. So as we look at these things, we can see that the timing is pretty clear, and this is the understanding I've had since I've come into the church. And our understanding, I think, fits biblically. Interestingly, as you think about Christ coming and their rising to meet Christ in the air, why do they do that? Have you ever thought about that? Why do they rise to meet Christ in the air? Well, seeking to debunk the accurate understanding of 1 Thessalonians, which talks about rising to meet Christ in the air and being with Him always, one author asked, if Christ is already headed our way, why would we need to be caught up to meet Him? And that's a pretty good question. Why is that? Well, the answer reinforces what we've already learned from the Bible about this much understood, misunderstood topic. The answer lies in the meaning of the word meet. Vine's Expository Dictionary of Biblical Words said the word is used in the papyri of a newly arriving magistrate. It seems that the special idea of the word was the official welcome of a newly arrived dignitary. Jameson Fawcett Brown commentary adds in their notes for these verses, when a king enters his city and the loyal go forth to meet him. So it's pretty appropriate that those who are God's people, who have acknowledged Him and accepted Him, would go forth to meet the King of Kings. F.F. Bruce, International Bible Commentary, adds, to meet is used in the papyri of the official reception given to a visiting governor whom his citizens escort into the city from which they have come to meet him. So the saints will rise to meet Jesus Christ and then escort him to the earth where his kingdom will last forever. We know he will touch down, as we're told in Zechariah 14, and begin his reign on earth. The millennial kingdom will begin, and what a wonderful time it will be. It's the time we're focusing upon as the Feast of Trumpets is coming, Day of Atonement is coming, and the millennium we'll focus upon at the Feast of Tabernacles. So hopefully this gives you a better understanding of the subject of the rapture and a better understanding of how things unfold as the end of the age comes about. And the thing that we have to realize as we look at some of these different topics is we have an understanding of them, and not everybody may understand to the same degree or agree with everything. The thing that we know is Christ is going to come back, that there is going to be a resurrection of the dead. And when you look at many of the questions that sometimes we talk about, we can all think about, well, the fundamental question is this: will I be there? That's the fundamental question. So we may differ about some things, about some matters, about how it's all going to unfold, but you know what? I think all of us want to be there. And so the thing is, we may disagree on things and we can talk about it, but it shouldn't be something that's divisive if we believe a little bit differently about a particular subject. We can be in harmony and unity, all looking forward to the return of Christ, that seventh trumpet.